This is episode 64 with Bianca Zanini.
Welcome to the As Told by Nomads podcast, where you'll learn how nomads, third culture kids, entrepreneurs, and leaders all over the world embrace their global identity and use their difference to make a difference. And now, having lived on four different continents, here's your host, Tayo Roxy.
Welcome to As Told by Nomads. Today I have with me Bianca Zanini, and she's an award-winning Danish-Brazilian journalist who has, you know, worked in primarily as a video journalist. She's produced a series of TV and online media sites. She works in U.S., Europe, Latin America, and she also writes articles and directs her own projects. Her last film was recently selected for the prestigious Canadian Hot Ducks International Film Festival, and in addition to all this, she speaks five languages. That's English, Danish, Portuguese, Spanish, and French. So I'm so excited to have her because she has such an international background, and she has an international and human rights communications background as well. So welcome to the show, Bianca.
Thank you very much.
All right. So I was
happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here too. I was going through all that, and then the first thing that I wanted to say was, what do you normally identify as? I know you said Danish Brazilian, but then you have all these places that you travel to. So which places feel like home to you?
Well, that's a difficult question. I mean, I guess on a good day, which are most days, happily, I have many homes.
Yes.
And on a tough day, I don't feel at home anywhere specifically, you know? I think I connect to Denmark very much. I connect to Brazil. Now I connect also to New York because I lived there almost 5 years.
Yeah.
So, and I think I feel safe, and I feel like I belong all places, but at the same time, it's not entirely home. It's not entirely me, you know?
No.
I'm always a little bit out of place.
And I completely get you. And I was telling you earlier before we started the interview, I was telling you I moved to New York on purpose. And the reason for that is it's because it reminded me of home in some weird way, but it's also a lot of cultures. I'm from Lagos, Nigeria, and all the noise and the culture and everything just seemed to make me, even though I'm not from here, it just makes me felt like I was part of here. But
I think New York is definitely famous for that, for doing exactly that. Since everyone, almost everyone, is from somewhere else,
right,
we join together and make our own home there. I think it's very common. I definitely felt that too.
That's exactly true. So, do you know how many countries you've been to at this point?
No.
That is the epitome of, okay, that's the epitome of what we call a third culture kid and global nomad. So, all right. So now,
I've lived in four.
You've lived in four, but
so
you
that's not, you know.
But you traveled a lot more. Like,
yes.
You traveled a lot more. So when I found you on Twitter and I was looking at your background, it says, you know, you do a lot of independent documentary films, and you also produce a lot of content, and you work as a journalist. Can you tell me what drew you to doing these type of stuff, and why this particular journalism for you?
I think there are many answers, you know, or it's a long answer at least. I was always very, I guess, I love telling stories always from real life. You know, everything that happened, if I was crossing the street and something happened in traffic, I, like, even the smallest thing, I would turn into a story that I could tell, you know, in a good way. And another thing was, I've always had this really strong sense of justice. I want things to be fair. I want things to be right. And when they aren't, it, you know, it hurts me in my stomach, which is why I think my focus is social issue and, you know, prison system and punishment, crime and punishment, the idea that we as a society have of crime and punishment and guilt and forgiveness. And I think that I remember when I was 17, I think, I read Crime and Punishment of Dostoevsky.
You read Crime and Punishment?
Of course, and it's a classic.
I know it is. I avoided that book for so long because I was so scared about how long
it was. Oh my God, it changed my life. It's so funny. And I remember I read an article about some other documentary director who said he read this book and it changed his life. And I was like, no, that's my story, but it's actually true. You know, this is what happened. It was so interesting to feel for the first time what it's like to be inside the mind of someone who's done something terrible. And at the same time, trying to understand them and having compassion for them, or at least trying to explain why, you know? And I think that's important, you know, understanding your enemy. I don't know if it's your enemy, but, you know, understanding all sides that we're human.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me because, you know, sometimes when you watch thrillers and stuff like that and you see the mind of like a psychopath or sociopath, it's always interesting to see that perspective. But you want to raise awareness to, you said, the prison system and a lot of what goes on in the world, right? Injustice. What do you feel that the world doesn't actually realize? What do you feel like is being portrayed in the world, and how do you feel like they need to be more aware? Because I just did a story with a guy that does yoga in prisons in South Africa, and he was going. His premise was that a lot of the people that get in prison, you know, South Africa, they come back and then, you know, they end up back in prison because prison doesn't prepare them for life outside of prison. And then, you know, a lot of them have the quote unquote excuse of saying they had no other means. So I'm curious as to what you found in your research about prison and justice system overall in different countries and how we can be better global citizens and do our part.
Well, let's look at the film that I'm working on right now, my next documentary. It's about children and minors in the U.S. serving life without parole. That's a big thing. It's kids down to 14 years old that are sentenced to serve life without parole in prison. What that actually means, and this happens in the U.S. only, as far as we know. And what this means is that these kids are sentenced to die in prison, basically. You know, they're going to spend their life, and then when they die, they're never going to get out. They are, you know, society has given up on them. And I think, unfortunately, it says something about the American justice system. Americans think it's important to punish more than it is to, you know, punishing for the sake of punishing more than it is to help these people, or to understand why they did it, or to give them a second chance, or to rehabilitate. Like, the prison system in America is a business, huge business, you know? Mm. So I think that film, I think it's important, and I'm hoping to... So I have two different characters that I want to tell their stories. One is a kid who was, you know, 14, had never done anything before, was convicted of felony murder, which means he was part of a robbery during that robbery, someone killed someone else. So he wasn't actively part of it. So, and still he's serving life without parole. I feel like his story, he's very charming. It's easy to understand, to argue that he should have a second chance. Mm. And there's this other kid who, you know, I can't say too many details, but like, he beat up his neighbor's daughter to death. He was 14 too, and he hid her under his bed, and he did these really horrible things, but at the same time he was 14, you know? Like, do we just give up on our kids as a society? Do we try to help them? If we put them behind bars forever, is that not cruel and unjust?
No, that's interesting, because I'm thinking of the mindset of the person, like they said, the lady that was killed, right? The lady that had her daughter killed. How do you reconcile that? Because a lot of times it's tough for, you know, if they lost someone, do you feel? Yeah.
It's never that simple, and I'm not saying we shouldn't punish, you know, and I want to be clear about that. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not saying that. I'm just saying that people are more than just one thing. Mm-hmm. And if I think the justice system shouldn't just be based on emotion. I think if someone killed my daughter, I would want that person to be killed themselves, probably. But that would be an emotion, a feeling of revenge. I would want my society to be higher than that, to have principles and morals that are like, no. Numbers and statistics and psychology shows that if we do something to rehabilitate these people, to punish them, of course, make them realize what they've done, they have to be punished for their crimes, but to rehabilitate them, then they can actually come back into society and be productive citizens.
Yes.
Wow. You know, if you just give up on people, then it's yeah.
No, I mean, like, this is one of those dilemmas that society goes with. I don't know if you follow the Aaron Hernandez case here, but he was an American football player that was just found guilty for killing someone, so now he just got sentenced to life. And, you know, I mean, everybody has different sides of the story, but it's always, I'm always looking at both sides, and I'm always wondering how to feel, because, like you said, there's a lot of emotions, and I never know. So, I society having, that crime and punishment book was one of the reasons why I was afraid to read it, because I was afraid of what would happen in my mindset, but it's one of those tough situations. Yeah.
Sorry, no, I don't also want to sound like I'm too soft, you know? It's not that I don't think that you should, I mean, it's not that I don't think that there should be consequences to your actions. I really think there should be, but I want to shed light on an issue that a lot of people don't know about and haven't really thought about. And we also have to, it's a part of a bigger issue about what do we want our prisons to do.
Yeah. I think you're right. I mean, I think if you have an institution as prisons, it's you know, you have to be wired a certain way, certainly. But there are the things that maybe should be put in place that take emotions out of it and are able to understand how, you know, the people as a society can rehabilitated. So I'm very curious to see what the documentary is, because
it's gonna be out in I hope a year and a half or two.
Okay, all right. No,
I'll be curious. Well, you know, it's something that I'm doing on the side of everything else, because these things take a long time. You have to write letters. You have to find, you know, the right characters, the right people to work with. And I'm living in Copenhagen right now. I mean, I don't know for how long, but yeah.
All right. So, okay. Now. Yeah. You said it takes long for documentaries. I'm thinking of someone who wants to, if someone wants to go in your line of work, what does it take? Because you do journalism, you do video journalism as well.
Yeah.
And what's the process like? So you have an idea, and then you pitch it to someone, or do you find the characters, or what do you do? Do you write like a script for a movie? What's the process?
Well, it depends. I mean, do you, the process for what, you know? Like the process to getting an idea to making a documentary?
Yeah.
All right. So for this one, it was actually for all of mine, they all started with like me reading an article somewhere and the story just getting stuck with me for a while. And then I've been, you know, chewing on it for a bit. And then I'm like, let me read some more about this. And I start reading some more articles and I can feel, okay, I think this is something that is, it's touching me and something that needs to be told. And then I start talking with friends and colleagues and I hear if it's just me that haven't, you know, that if it's something that everyone already knows a lot about, or if it's something that's a bit different or less, you know, that hasn't come into light that much.
Gotcha.
And then I start researching and I start finding people that might have interesting stories. You know, once in the 90s, there was a journalist who wrote an article about this. And I'm like, okay, interesting. Then once in the, you know, you start gathering research and then I start contacting people. Sometimes I'll start by calling an expert or a journalist and asking them a bunch of questions about the topic. And other times I start by finding a good character. And then once I have a little bit of this in place, I'll write down an idea of how I would like the film to be. And then I start asking for support. And it's the same, I guess, for my video docs that are short docs. It's also based on an idea, and I do some basic research, and then I write down a pitch
Gotcha.
of, possible characters that I have to prepare. It's
Gotcha.
not just out of nowhere, And then I pitch it, and then if they like it, we continue. And a
No.
lot of times it's not like a someone says yes immediately. It's a really, really long process. And
No, I can imagine. I have my business partner's working on a documentary for international students in the United States, about international students in the United States. And she's going through this process you're going through. And I just think it's interesting, the idea of gathering information and doing the research, because there's so many things that go into play. And like you said,
So many.
it's a long process. All right, now, okay. So that's one side of you. What's the other side of you? What are the things do you find yourself? What are the projects do you find yourself doing besides video projects?
Well, it's mostly video projects and different. I will write articles as well. Okay, I'm a journalist. I have a master's in journalism, and I was working at a newspaper, a big newspaper here in Denmark, and I was relatively young and already writing front page news, and I felt like this wasn't the place for me to reach a broad and young audience. Like the classic newspaper wasn't where I was going to change the mind of young people and reach them. So I went to New York and I took a 1 year documentary course at New York Film Academy. And I wanted to learn just the hands-on part, not the theoretical part, because I had all the theory. I'd worked as a journalist. I knew how to interview, how to research. I just needed to know how to use a camera, how to edit, and how to tell a story, in a filmic way. And so I did that. And so I went from doing news journalism for a while, which was a bit, it was too fast for me. I was like, I'm not getting in depth with anything. I'm not reaching the people I want to reach. And then I started doing just documentaries, and I was like, it's too slow for me. It takes a long time. I need a mix. And that's where I found video journalism and what I'm doing right now. I'm working as a freelancer, and I'm getting the best of both worlds. And I think people can sometimes be scared of that. And I understand, but for me, it's definitely worth it.
Gotcha.
Definitely worth it.
Yeah, no, it's like it's as an entrepreneur myself, it's one of those things where you're not sure. You're just leaping, right? You're leaping, you don't know where the net's gonna appear, you don't know if you're gonna
Absolutely.
land, and you're like, but you take the risk. But you said you wanted that mix, and one of the things that I didn't mention in your bio, but I know that you do, is sometimes you work with Vice Media, and Vice Media has a reputation for reaching that young audience, sometimes in even provocative manner, but they try to get to the core of the matter and touch subjects that people are not touching. So, can you tell me what
Oh,
it's like?
Vices is amazing.
Can you tell me what it's like to work for Vice? Because I see the documentaries on HBO, and I watch a lot of the. Well, I'm from Nigeria, so I was really watching the Ebola coverage that they had there. And I'm very, very interested in what the process is actually like, and what what the stories are, how they get to you, and what the environment is.
Well, the environment is very youthful, very young, but very ambitious. People are having fun, and there's a light atmosphere in the office, but it's serious. We all take it very, very seriously. And I'm very, very proud to be part of Vice and to be able to work for them. I was just at a big project that lasted 3 months here in Denmark, and I think it's changing the way that we see journalism a little bit. We go in to different societies, to subcultures, and we talk to people and we listen to them and we let them talk and we give them a voice and we let our audience form their own opinion. And I think that's what one of the reasons why Vice is able to do all these crazy stories and to go where people don't usually go, because we're not standing with our little blazer and our microphone 10 meters away or 10 feet away from what's happening. We go in there with them and we ask and we talk and we meet them, at eye level. I think that's one of the most important things.
And the key thing you said there was you let the audience form their own opinion. I think that's that's really what journalism should be. I'm not sure where we lost that, but a lot of times when you have people trying to influence your opinion, it always makes people say, well, this leans liberal, this leans conservative, this leans media, you know. So, but I think journalism is letting, you know, covering stories the way they are and letting people come up with their own opinions. You know, I've been a fan of Vice because of that.
We're showing realities. We're showing subcultures and parts of societies all over the world. And I think also if you think of media, global media, and what's the future of journalism and what's, you know, I think that Vice is one of these organizations that is it's one of the most positive things for youth all over the world, because we've been, you know, in America, most of the stories you read about are in the news are from the US. In Europe, most of them are from here. In Denmark, you know, there has to be a Danish angle. You know, we've become more focused on our own backyards and our own houses and our own little worlds. And I think that Vice is helping change that, because you can see we are interested in what's happening on the other side of the world. It just has to be told in an interesting way. It has to be told in a real way, in our own language.
I agree. And for the youth out there, you know, people in our generation, millennials and even Generation Z, how do you feel like we can use media to make an impact? The reason why I launched my media company was because it's the same reason that, you know, the Vice existed, as I got tired of the way stories were told. And then I wanted to have a platform where people could tell the stories and actually see what culture was like in different parts of the world. So I said, why don't I just start it? And that's something that probably wasn't possible maybe 15, 20 years ago, but the internet has given us that platform for everyone to become their own media company. So how do you feel that the youth can make an impact, the social impact in the world, whether it's activism or just to get awareness out about stories that need to be told?
I mean, I feel like people are starting doing that now. Like, the project that you're doing is super interesting. And, like, YouTube channels and Facebook and all of this is really good at sharing. You know, it's a good platform for sharing stories. And I think that if we make sure that we tell stories in a good way, in like a quality way, it doesn't matter where the story is from. We just have to find a common language, you know, which I think is what Vice does. When I said that it has to be spoken in our language, I don't mean like English or French.
It doesn't matter. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Most people that I know don't care about subtitles or not. And it doesn't matter if the story is told in a strong way, in a good way. And it doesn't even have to be a 3-camera crew. We can go and do it with our own cameras now. You know, we can tell stories in 5 minutes. We can tell them in 20 or, you know, 50. I just really think we should, all of us who wants to work in journalism.
Should do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's go to some more fun questions here. What is the funnest story that you've worked on?
The funnest.
I don't know if that's it. First of all, I don't know if that's English. So, excuse me. But what is the most fun you've had working on a story? Maybe that's a better way to ask that.
Oh no, I can't decide that. I've had so much fun, and it always depends. It's different kinds of fun, you know. I remember there was one time when I wanted to be a better editor. I wanted to learn how to edit better, so I said yes to this job in New York, in Brooklyn, for a show called Jewish Star, which was a singing competition for Hasidic men, Hasidic Jews. And it was just, it has nothing to do with my culture. It's completely a different world. And it was one of the funnest, weirdest things to be part of. Because I was, you know, I was learning to be a better editor and to cut things well and to have rhythm and to use a program well. And at the same time, I was just making this reality TV competition, this reality TV show for a huge Hasidic Jewish community in New York, and there was this beautiful little song, like theme song for the program. It was really, really just weird and fun and eye-opening as well. You know, I learned about a culture. And then there's another kind of fun, which was I was covering the World Cup for in Brazil.
I was going to get there. Keep going. But I was one of the questions I wanted to ask you.
No, that was just a lot of fun. There was a lot of stories there, and one of the stories that I did was, well, I've been working in Brazil for like 3 years, back and forth a little bit, and in that time, I made contact with a guy who started as, a driver, someone to help us with this, someone to help us with that. And I started talking more and more with him, and he became a really good contact in the slums. He's the guy who would take me into the slums. And he told me once that someone he knew was one of the biggest drug lords in Rio. And I asked him if he would let me interview him, and he was like, no, of course not, of course not, of course not. And then after a while, like, he was like, one day he's like, yeah, so I spoke to him and he said, yes, we can do it like next week. And I was like, oh my God. And it's really, it's a big deal. And he was like, it has to be only you, there can't be anyone else. And I'm like, no way am I going all by myself into a slum to do, you know, somewhere I don't know, full surrounded by men in machine guns and in masks and doing an interview. No, I need like at least a cameraman with me. So we negotiated back and forth, and he said yes, and we went. And you know, I've been talking to this guy, well, not anymore of course, but I did a few times on the phone, and he saw the video that we made, the film, and he liked it, like he approved of it. And it's just I don't know. He was just an interesting guy. And I think he was surprisingly charming. He came in, he was like, I have only 10 minutes, you know, I don't even know why I'm doing this. And he ended up sitting with me for more than an hour and talking about his kids and, you know, and what he likes to do and what music he likes. And then also we talked about how many people he killed and how he was controlling everything from inside of the prison. This is a bad guy. Yeah. But I guess if you go up that high in the community, it's also because you know how to deal with people and you know how to be charming. And he was. And I think telling stories like that, that was really a crazy, unique access. And in the end, he was like, hey, do you want to try to hold my gun?
Wow.
Like, wow, you know. And I've never even seen a gun, you know. Grew up in Denmark. We don't really have that here. So, so that was a pretty crazy fun experience too. Yeah. So there's a bit of everything, you know.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a mix of fun, danger, and intrigue there. But wow.
Yeah, I think it depends on what you want from each thing, you know. The Jewish Star program was like, I wanted to learn how to edit, and I had good people that could teach me that, and then I had some fun in the meantime. This wasn't for me a journalistic project, you know.
Yeah No,
and so it all depends on what you want out of something. And I think maybe that's what can help you when you're a freelancer and you take on different projects, to know, what do I need to get better at? What do I want from this project? And if I do this, what should I do then? What would, you know, be good in connection with it, or what would be a good supplement, or what do I need? Like, you can look back at your work and see, this wasn't that good, this wasn't that great, this was okay, but it could be better. And I mean, I'm still young. Everything is about getting better, you know. I feel like every time I've made a project, I look back and I've learned, like, I know now how I should have done it.
You're right. I mean, I feel like we grow every day, and it's the same way. When I remember when I first started podcasting, it was an accident, and I didn't know what I was doing, but it was the same sort of way. But you get better at interviewing the more you feel, and you get better at finding stories. Like, I found you on Twitter, and maybe I couldn't do that before, but if you just find a way to share a story and try and connect with someone. And then I am blown away though by your Brazilian story. I can't imagine what that's like. But you should definitely do a story in Nigeria, my home country. You would have a lot of stories, similar stories.
Yeah.
Especially for the Boko Haram. You would have a lot of similar stories. But all right, now let's before we wrap up here, I want you to dispel some stereotypes about Denmark and Brazil. I grew up, one of the countries I grew up in was Sweden. But
Scandinavia.
Yeah, Stockholm. My brother was born in Stockholm. But there are a lot of stereotypes about Denmark and Scandinavia as a whole. So I want you to walk our audience through what it's actually like to live in Denmark and what the way of life is there and how that's so different from living in Brazil and the United States.
All right.
I know I put you on the spot, but I'm sure you're used to this.
I think one thing that is amazing about Denmark is we have this amazing trust. Trust is the biggest word, I think. If you take a walk through the street on a spring day, like the street next to my apartment, you're going to see like maybe 7, 8, or 9 baby carriages. That's what they call strollers.
Yeah. Strollers, baby carriages. Strollers. Yeah.
With babies sleeping inside of them and no moms around because the moms are inside the stores or they're having, they're eating lunch with someone inside the restaurant and they can see the baby. It's right outside. It's right outside the window. And for me, it's such a natural thing. I always grew up with it and I think it's super cute. And of course, they have a little baby monitor and everything. And I just think it's so beautiful that we can do this. And I have friends that came here and visited and they're like, oh my God, this is crazy. What are these women doing? This is super dangerous. And I'm like, it's really not. There has not been one case of a child abduction or anything like that. And I think it says a lot about our society. I also like we have trust in the government. We have trust in general in each other. It's a very safe country, and at the same time, it's also it's very small, and the mentality can be very small sometimes as well. I mean, one of the things that I find really great about Denmark is that we always make sure to help our weakest ones, but at the same time, it's not a country that allows a lot of that pushes people to become their best either.
Gotcha.
I think we sometimes end up fostering mediocrity. Oh my, I can't even say the word.
Yeah, mediocrity. You got it.
Mediocrity.
Yeah.
We end up fostering mediocrity here in Denmark because we are so focused on taking the weakest ones with us, which I think is one of the strengths as well. It's just that it's complex. But one of the reasons I went to the U.S. and one of the things I love about America is exactly this mentality. You if someone says they have a dream, then people will usually support them or like, okay, so go for it and you'll work for that dream and you'll go to New York and there's a whole system and way of thinking that supports personal growth and people who have talent.
Gotcha. Wow. Yeah.
And I think another thing that like my parents being Brazilian here in Denmark was every time we went to the supermarket or the restaurant or just stepped outside of our house, we would be the loudest people ever. Like always, always, always. It didn't even matter. We were just always the loudest, most different people. My dad is an artist. My mom she's a pianist. She plays, so they're both artists. And they're like, my dad's a little bit crazy in the good sense, He'll talk really, really loudly. He'll remember. And it's just, I was always different. And I think perhaps that was one of the needs as well. It wasn't just a professional need. It was a personal need as well to get out of here some more and just go to a place like New York where everyone else, well, everybody's different. I'm not even that, like, I don't stand out that much over there, you know? And I think that gave me a feeling of safety. And when I was in Brazil, it was, I was the cousin from Europe. So I think that's what I meant by what I said in the beginning about feeling at home in many places, but also feeling a little bit outside.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
I don't know if that actually said anything about the stereotypes.
No, I mean, well, Brazil, The stereotype is that I know it is actually, it's a football nation, soccer nation, that's all they do. But then there's a lot more to Brazil, because a lot of my Brazilian friends talk about some of the different things going on, whether it's the economy, government, whatever. But I'm always curious still as to what the people are like, what the normal day to life is in Brazil.
I think it depends a lot. You know, I think here in Denmark, we have more of a norm because we have a smaller gap of income. Where in Brazil, it's huge. We have some of the richest people and some of the poorest people.
Right.
And I think, I mean, I really, really love Brazil. And I think that you keep hearing about all these research, all these studies that say, oh, Denmark is the happiest nation in the world. I'm not sure that's true. Danes are really satisfied and we feel safe and we feel secure. But if you walk on the streets, I think Brazilians are much warmer and more open and more smiling and have this mentality of let's kick the ball forward, you know, okay, shit happened, so what are we going to do about it? Let's move on. Life is tough, you know, get used to it or whatever, like let's make it better. I think that's part of being happy as well.
Gotcha. No, it's good. I think it's good. What you said about Brazil is exactly how a lot of, you know, countries that are moving up from, an economy level grow. I mean, Nigeria, you have a lot of richest people. You also have a lot of the poorest people. And same with a lot of countries in Africa, where they're developing and they're up and coming. The disparity is wider than other countries. But it's also very, very populous. So a lot of people in there. So that also adds to the disparity. So, but you know, I think it's great that you painted that picture because I know just from talking to my Brazilian friends that there's obviously a lot more than Pele and Neymar, and the World Cup. But there's also a lot more culture. So
yeah, there is, and I have actually a lot of faith in the new generation. I think people inside Brazil very often get blinded by, things are tough right now. There are corruption scandals. And it's true. It's horrible, and we need to fight this. But I actually, you know, looking at Brazil from outside, I see a positive development. I see a youth that is more informed and that has a will to do something about it. Like my cousin, for instance, he came to Denmark and studied for a year, and he's going to go to the U.S. now and study 2 years. But he is planning on going back to Brazil because he wants to contribute to Brazilian society. He wants to help make Brazil a better place. And I think that he's not uncommon, you know? And I think that that's a good thing. I have faith in the young generation of Brazil.
And you're someone I have faith in, too. So I really do appreciate
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you coming on here and talking about all that you do. So this is the part where I want you to talk about where people can find you and your next project and how people can reach out to you and maybe even leave a last sage advice for the audience about what to do in our society today. But this is all yours. Take over.
Sorry, I'm like, I don't know an advice to give to the listeners.
Well, you can start saying what you're up to next, and then you're gone.
Okay, well, right now I'm going to continue working for freelancing for Vice, and I'll be back hopefully on Vice full time in the fall. And I'm going to continue working on my projects. I'm probably going to go to Brazil and work some more there. And I'm going to go to Israel, work some more there. I think I listen a lot to my gut, I guess. If there's a story that I keep thinking about that I want to do, then I actually try to make everything possible for me to do it. You know, once I set something, set a goal, I'll go for it. And another thing, I guess, also that I find important is I was always very, very ambitious. And I had one, you know, this is what I want to do and I'll go after it. And then suddenly, after I finished my documentary course, I had like a year or two where I'm like, I don't know exactly what I want. So I'm going to shop around a little bit. It's all within the same, you know, it's journalism, it's documentary film, it's social issue, but it could be Brazil, it could be the US, it could be, you know, there. And I think that made me so much better at what I do. And it gave me a little bit more of a gutsy feeling, a gutsy take. I'm less scared, I guess, to jump into projects because I had a time where I was fumbling a little bit. And I think that is really good because you try out different things and then you find out, okay, I like this. This is what I'm good at. This makes sense now. I have all these little boxes and I'm trying to put them together and now they're making sense and they're taking me up. I'm making little boxes with my hands and you can't see them. But, so I guess just, I think people will be more, like, I'm not going to look back and be like, wow, I regret having spent 5 years of my life in New York and it was tough sometimes, you know? And of course it was tough. And I can look at some of my friends here back in Denmark that had the same journalistic background as me. We went to the same school. Like my friend at the same age, she has an apartment that she, you know, loves. She has a steady job. She has a really good income, big, more like loans and, you know, the car and everything. And I just came back, you know, from New York. I'm, you know, I have a very little materialistic things.
Yeah.
But I have an experience that I think has made me a lot happier. And I got a little bit away from it. So anyway, I will continue to work on my stories in different places in the world and maybe try to create a little bit of a brand around me. Like, this is the kind of journalistic stories I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are the stories that I do. And this is the video journalist or this is the documentarian that I am. You know, I have my voice. And I want to try to build that up more now. And my next project is that documentary that I told you about.
Yeah.
That I mentioned earlier. And then all the small projects. And I'm going to continue with the international view. I'm not going to focus on just one country because I think it's all about the story. It's not about the country.
Gotcha.
Oh. So, yeah.
Hey, let me know when you have all these
things. I'm sorry, that wasn't very clear, but, you know.
No, yeah, I got the message. You know, you, a lot of the experiences you've had have made you become who you are today, and you wouldn't trade them for what they are, even when it felt like you were maybe unsure of what the future would have. But you found yourself through those lessons and experiences you put yourself in. I think you said it very well.
I'll say, don't be scared. Just try, you know, throw yourself out there because it'll work out.
I couldn't agree with you more. And that's honestly a similar story I have. So you couldn't see me. You were making boxes. I was just nodding my head over here.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Bianca. This has been great. And thank you for giving us a real life view of what, you know, stories are like and, you know, how you really think. I think it was really, really enlightening. So I appreciate that.
Thanks. I'm glad to hear. I hope your listeners will think that too.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to use your difference to make a difference, as well as for show notes, head over to www.uydmag.com. Till next time, go out and make an impact in your world.